Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. My name is Eric Schlitt of USA Today Lions Wire, and this is the official podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. My podcast partner, Joe Kania, is out of town for work, so he's unable to join us today, so this will just be me going solo. I'm going to try and get you guys as much information as possible. It'll probably be a shorter podcast than normal with Joe not here, and I'll try not to ramble on too much and keep you informed as much as I possibly can. So I guess the big news we should start out talking about is the fact that the Fords announced this week that Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn are going to be retained through at least 2020. And what does that mean? Mrs. Ford put expectations on that, saying that she was expecting them to be playoff contenders. And I think there's been people are going to interpret that different ways, and that's fine. But from my understanding and the way that I'm interpreting it is, it's not going to be as much about record as much as it is about being competitive at this time of the year next year, right? We've hit Thanksgiving mark this year, and the Lions' competitiveness was out the window because they were not available to make the playoffs at that point anymore. They're hoping to have a more competitive team overall. Now, injuries played a factor this year, but there was also, you know, coaching decisions and you know, there were some bad breaks early in the season that cost them wins, and so a whole variety of things that go along with this that have, you know, had a cumulative effect on the disappointing season that is 2019. But next year, they're basically saying the excuses aren't going to be there anymore. You're going to have to produce. You're going to have to overcome, and you know, if you don't have a good competitive score, but you're back into the playoffs, that might not be enough. But if you're, you know, missing out on the playoffs but have a competitive team, then there's the door still open for the duo to return again the following season. But it's all about being competitive. Now, this team has shown grit, and it's shown its toughness and not giving up. But it's been difficult for them to overcome the obstacles that have been in front of them. And you can't put 14 plus people on IR, most of them starters, and then expect to be able to go in and out every week, especially when you lose your franchise quarterback in Matthew Stafford. Now, one of the other caveats was that they were expecting to see some shuffling amongst the coaching staff. And I don't want to speculate too much on that because I don't want to start naming names of people that, you know, I believe should lose their jobs. That's not the business that I'm in. But when they happen, we'll do our best to get you, you know, some possible replacement options. I know the big guy that people are going to want to point a lot of blame on it is Paul Pasqualoni, the defensive coordinator. And I'm sure he's willing to accept that. I think the results that you've seen on the field, there's an arrow pointing towards him. I think everyone's aware of that. But the caveat with Pasqualoni is that he was a mentor of Coach Patricia's for a really long time. So it's tough to fire a mentor. And if he doesn't get fired, it wouldn't surprise me, but I do think there could be a reallocation of his duties, similar to what the Lions did with Gunther Cunningham a few years back, where they move him into a different role, where they don't want to necessarily lose him, they don't want to necessarily embarrass him, they want him to still be around in a behind-the-scenes type aspect. But it does seem like he's going to be with the organization, in my mind, moving forward. If they replace him as the defensive play caller, that's another story. That could be something that happens. You could also see at all levels coaches being replaced because the team has struggled at different points, at different levels on defense and offense, at different points during the season. So I don't think there's necessarily going to be anyone safe outside of Darrell Bevell, who I think has done a nice job this year. Bevell has some flaws. We've talked about this previously on the podcast. Bevell has some late play calling issues that he had earlier in the year, but he's shown the ability to adjust later in the season. That's something that we haven't seen here in Detroit, especially on the offensive side of the ball, in some time. And his ability to adapt and adjust the offense, it has been, I think, a big caveat towards him sticking around next year. His success with Matthew Stafford is going to go a long way to keeping him here as well. I don't think there's really a question that he won't be around. Now, will some of the other offensive assistants stick around? That's hard to say. You know, I know they like your offensive line coach. I know that they like the other position coaches, but is there one that isn't doing their job enough? Did you get enough production out of the tight ends after the investment that you put into that position in the offseason? Does that make Chris White vulnerable, the tight ends coach? I think there's a lot of that will be determined as the few weeks post 2019 season roll on. As those 2 weeks unfold, I think we'll start to see a little bit more, but I don't think we're going to know everything in that 2 weeks. I think we might know who's out. I don't know if we'll know who's in, though. That'll be coming down the road. But like I said, what we do know is that both Patricia and Quinn will be back. Now, at times, you can look at Patricia and say, you know, you question his play calling or you question decision making. When you listen to him in interviews, I'm back and forth on whether or not I think he has the ability to lead the team to be playoff contenders. But there's times when I think he absolutely has it, and other times where I think you can still see he's the first-year coach, and is that going to be enough with this group? And I'm on the fence with Patricia. I feel stronger with Quinn. I've always been a Quinn fan, of liking what he does. But again, he has to be more aggressive in the offseason, and I think in order to make sure that he sticks around past 2020. I do think there's something to be said, though, for stability. And I'm a long believer that you find success in the NFL by not giving up on a system. And as Lions fans, we've seen the 3 years and out over and over and over, it seems. And that doesn't work in the NFL. And when you have to, it takes time. It takes 4 or 5 years to get a team in just based on turnover in order to get the guys that you want to fit your style or to fit your scheme or, you know, to be able to pick your own players as a front office. And you have to be patient with that. Expecting quick turnarounds while they're becoming more popular to see these quick turnarounds, if you want the team to be stable for a long period of time, you need to have a foundation. And I don't think you can build a foundation by giving up so quickly. So I understand wanting to keep this duo around for another year. I think it's warranted, and I think if you think the foundation is there and the effort is there, and you can turn things around, and it can turn around pretty quickly. We've seen that in the NFL several times. There's the difference between a 6-10 team and a 10-6 team. Really is about 5 to 10 plays in a season. The NFL is still very close in its performance, and the teams, there's not as big of a separation between them as you know people would lead you to believe. And when you make a bad decision here or there and it costs you a game, you make a couple of those and it costs you two, and before you know it, you're on the wrong side of that 6-10. And if those 10 plays go right, you could end up having a complete swing in that order, and now you're 10-6, and now you're in the playoffs. And if you think that this duo is, you know, able to make those decisions to point the team in the right direction, then you stick with them. And that's what the Fords have done. Obviously they've shown that they believe that this is the duo that they think can make those 10 or 12, you know, decisions that can turn this team around and get the wins and loss columns flipped around. Now, they're putting their money where their mouth is, the Fords. The Fords are putting their money where their mouth is because, yes, they're not increasing ticket prices. They're going to lower some because they know that fans are upset. They know they're going to lose some people that aren't going to want to buy tickets. They're going to lose some season ticket holders. They're going to have merchandise sales that are down. So they're going to lose more money probably next year unless they start putting together wins pretty quickly. And they know that, and they know it's going to be a long offseason, and they're going to lose money probably off of that. But again, if you believe that this team is there for the long term, you're willing to lose a little bit of money now if you think you're going to make more down the road. And so they've put their money where their mouth is. And the side note here, the Fords are not selling the team. No matter how much people want it, no matter how much people make a profit off of the concept of the Fords needing to sell the team, they're not going to sell the team. There's no way. An NFL team is too profitable to just up and get rid of it for no reason. And there's a succession plan, and we're starting to see it. We've seen it for the last few years, and we're starting to see it more pronounced now. Sheila Ford Hamp is now signing her name onto more important documents and more important press releases, and she's already had a significant role in the organization, and now that role is even increasing, and we can see there's a very clear succession plan after Martha decides to pass the team on to Sheila, or she's 94 years old. Eventually, her time will come, and she may have to need to turn the team over in other facets, right? So we're gonna end up with a Ford ownership, I believe, with the Lions for a very long time. All right, so I feel like I probably wasted a good 10 minutes of your time here going over that, and I know everyone has their own opinion, but let's get to the Broncos and what is going on with the team right now so that we can get ready for Week 16. Starting with the injury report, we have A'shaun Robinson and Devin Kennard, and they have not been able to practice this week. We've seen no practice from them Wednesday or Thursday. We probably won't see them practice on Friday, which means that they are most likely going to be out. We saw a return of Bo Scarborough, Rick Wagner, and Christian Jones to limited practices, which is good news for them, but they're not out of the woods yet. All three of those guys are still on that kind of 50-50, so we could potentially see Bo Scarborough come back and join a backfield with Wes Hills, who we'll talk about, and potentially Kerryon Johnson, which we'll talk about in a second. Rick Wagner could take back a starting job from Tyrell Crosby, and then Christian Jones would get in the mix. I don't think he will impact Jelani Tavai's snaps too much, but he would take over that role from Jalen Reeves-Maybin, who got the start last week. So Damon Harrison was full practice on Wednesday, took his normal rest day on Thursday, and he should be back at practice today. We'll expect some sort of designation from him when the injury report is released, but I'm expecting Damon Harrison to play and be okay. Steve Longo is also on the injury report with a quad injury. He's practiced in full, though, so he's not going to be an issue as moving forward. So like I said, the big ones here are A'shaun Robinson and Devin Kennard. With no Robinson, that will if he's unable to go, that'll open the door for John Atkins, the second-year nose tackle out of Georgia, and potentially Frank Heron, who was just signed off the practice squad from the Miami Dolphins a week ago. And both of them could see an increased opportunity. If Devin Kennard can't play, that's an opportunity for Austin Bryant, the rookie out of Clemson, to get a lot of snaps. Could also see Christian Jones, if he's available to play, supplement him at the Jack linebacker position as well. Maybe even Tavai if Jones isn't ready. So there's some options out there. Most of them are all young, but that's honestly what you should see from this team at this point of the year anyways. You should see a lot of the younger players filling in. Excuse me. Because of that, and because this is the concept of this team is moving forward and they're looking towards 2020, if any of the veteran players are getting dinged up, they're getting placed on IR. Matthew Stafford has finally been placed on IR. Thankfully, that's been a long time coming. Jared Davis was placed on IR before last week's game. So was Joe Dahl before last week's game. Kenny Wiggins has been placed on IR after last week's game, and as was Mike Daniels. Both of them were injured, had arm injuries in this week's. Kenny Wiggins already had surgery to repair his, so his he would have been out regardless. He's an interesting player to look at as far as going into the 2020 season because is a guy that they really like as far as depth. And I think that he will be a player that could easily come back on a one-year deal again and give them some stability and some insurance, especially considering the fact that they haven't done anything with Graham Glasgow at this point yet. So with Joe Dahl and Kenny Wiggins both on injured reserve and Graham Glasgow entrenched at right guard, Frank Ragnow at center, that means Ode Abuja is going to be your left guard now. That is, he's only had a handful of snaps all year, and most of them came last game. So he's a veteran, though, and he's started plenty in the past. So the line itself should be okay, and it should be able to sustain, like I said, with his the fact that he's a veteran should be okay. I'll be interested to see if the Lions start to supplement some of his snaps, though, with Bo Benchall, the undrafted rookie out of Wisconsin. He was a guy that fans were really impressed with, really high on. He struggled pretty mightily in camp, got better as it went on, earned himself a spot on the roster. He's been inactive pretty much every week, except for when he hasn't. I think it was one week he wasn't inactive, but he didn't play any snaps on offense or special teams. But now he's their third interior offensive lineman. And if something happens to Abuche, Benchall would be next man up. Now, maybe he splits snaps with Abuche to begin with, to even start the game. That is still to be determined, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him get some NFL experience over these last couple of weeks. Another guy that is now their fourth interior offensive lineman is Caleb Benabach. I always butcher his name. I apologize. Beniach. There it is. He they claimed off the Cowboys cut him, and the Cowboys cut him, and then they claimed him off of waivers. He's got like 3 years experience. It's not a lot of it. Has done a whole lot. Most of it came in Tampa Bay. He was a starter for them the year before last, and at right guard. But he was a right tackle at UCLA. I don't think he's a guy who's necessarily going to jump Benchall, but if the coaching staff wants to go with experience, they have some of that in him. Dan Skipper was also promoted ahead of last week's game, so he's on the active roster. He's, in my mind, a pure right tackle. The only way that he would play would be if Wagner's unable and then one of the tackles between Crosby and Decker got hurt. Other than that, I think Dan Skipper will just be maybe that sixth offensive lineman or just stay on the bench. Okay, so at the running back, though, we talked about, I mentioned earlier, Wes Hills was promoted. He will potentially join Bo Scarborough if he's able to play. And Kerryon Johnson, who's been practicing for 3 weeks, is now eligible to come off of the injured reserve. Now, Kerryon Johnson has been very adamant about the fact that he wants to return. And the Lions have gone all week with an open roster spot. And it sure looks like they're holding it for Kerryon Johnson. At this point on Friday, he still has not been activated. If he's not activated on Friday, I would expect him to be activated on Saturday. And then all of a sudden, you have a pretty nice set of running backs if Kerryon is back and Bo comes off of injury. You also have Wes Hills, who put two touchdowns in and is looking for opportunities. Ty Johnson, who you drafted in the sixth round, and then J.D. McKissic. And all four of those guys are all five of those guys are either slated to come back next year or restricted or exclusive rights free agents. So it's very possible that we could see all five of these running backs on the roster heading into next season. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think they've all shown different talent at different time, and they've shown promise when they've seen the field. But I don't think – I mean, maybe they keep all five going into next year, but I think they will keep all five going into the offseason. The other player that was signed this week was Jamin Madier. Jamin Madier played for a really long time with the Cleveland Browns. Then he went to – they had a coaching staff change, and he left. He went to Seattle. He didn't make it out of camp, but he's got a lot of veteran experience. He's 30-some-odd games played. He's been a starter for Cleveland all of – I think 2 years ago he started every game. He's played – all along the defensive line. He can play the nose tackle, he can play the three technique, even out at the five technique. So he's another veteran defensive lineman who will get a shot. And if Ashon can't go, like we just talked about, opens up opportunities for Atkins and Heron, and then Madier would be that fourth option at defensive tackle. Where one of the guys that I liked coming out of last year's draft was the Wisconsin nose tackle, Olev Sagapolu. He's a very strong, high-ceiling type of nose tackle. Lions signed him to a practice squad this week. He is a high character and very motivated guy. Coaches will like him. It'd be nice to see him. If he can get a futures contract with the Lions, I think they would be well served having him as kind of their third nose tackle going into the offseason. It gives them some potential without having, you know, to reach for a nose tackle at some point in the offseason just to fill roster spots. Additionally, on the practice squad, they signed Christian Sam. Now, Christian Sam was a linebacker 2 years ago that I really liked, and I was I had him, I think I had a fourth-round grade on him, and he ended up getting drafted in the sixth. He got drafted ironically, not so ironically, by the Patriots. Similar scheme, which is why I loved Sam with the Lions. I thought he fit the scheme very well. Went with the Patriots. They were loaded. He left there. Then I believe he went to Miami, who again runs that same scheme. Now he's here on the practice squad in Detroit. I like him quite a bit. He will fill a similar role to Jason Kabinda and Steve Longa, where he can play that off the ball plus some special teams. I'm excited to see if he can stick around, get a futures deal, and then be a guy who competes into the offseason. So that's the roster moves. Quite a bit of movement over this last, week since we've talked. And there's going to be more of this moving forward, especially over the next 2 weeks. We're going to see a lot more of these types of situations. So I've mentioned futures deal a couple of times. Let me expand on that just for a second, just because I've had people ask me about it. What the way the rosters work is you are allowed to maintain your 53-man roster into the offseason up until the new year begins in March. That coincides with free agency. But you can't exceed that 53-man roster. So if you have all these guys on IR, they don't count towards the 53-man roster. But you are not allowed to carry a practice squad towards that. You can't have a practice squad into the offseason. So what happens is those practice squads immediately become free agents as soon as the regular season ends. Now, most teams aren't going to sign those players to a 53-man roster because they'd have to release someone else. So the league has a supplemental contract called a futures deal, and that means it's a younger player who meets the same eligibility type things as the practice squad. They're allowed to get offered a futures deal. Now, they don't count towards that 53-man roster, so you can offer players futures deals, and as long as you can keep those contracts underneath the salary cap, which is what they will be, those futures deals all count towards the salary cap. As long as you can keep those deals under the salary cap, you can sign all these different futures deals that you want. Now, come March 1st, those futures deals now become regular contracts, or March, I think it's 7th this year. Once that new year begins, those futures deals now become regular contracts, and those players become part of the 53-man roster. But the 53-man roster becomes a 90-man roster at that point, and that's a 90-man roster is what you carry all the way up until through training camp, through the preseason, and then you have to cut it back down to 53 again. But those futures deals are basically like a little window that you can offer younger players contracts to say, hey, we want you to be part of our 90-man roster come March, and so this is the money that we're offering you. It's going to be a little bit more money than they're going to see as a practice squad type guy, and it shows an investment that the team wants to put in these guys. So you see a lot of practice squad players sign futures deals with the team that they were a practice squad player for. Not always the case. Sometimes those players will be let go, or they'll go to a different team that they think they have a better opportunity with. It just depends. But that's how the futures deals work. They are kind of like a off the books payment until March when they go on to the full roster. Okay, I don't think I want to spend too much time on the Bucks recap. At this point, we know what the team is. We know what they're capable of. We saw signs of life from David Blau in the second half, but not much in the first half. He still struggled. Wes Hill's punched two in, which shows his ability to grind it out, but he struggled in between the 20s, or really in between the fives, right? But Tampa Bay had the number one defense against the run in the league, so that was to be expected. Should be a nice injection of into the run game if they're able to return a couple guys like we talked about earlier. I thought Amendola was one of the better players on the Lions roster. He got the player of the game ball, and he was able to step up and fill in as that wide receiver two behind Kenny Golladay. But overall, the offense, it showed some signs of life, but not a lot. Logan Thomas continues to see more snaps, but Jesse James is getting the ball more. And, you know, Blau is starting to lean on the tight ends a little bit more, but it's still just a very stunted offense from what we've seen in the past. On defense, we're seeing a lot of the same. The defense continues to improve against the run, continues to struggle against the pass, and those things haven't changed. It still continues to be a problem. Melvin had a really hard time in coverage, as did Justin Coleman, as did Oruwariye, as did Mike Ford. And it just, Will Harris had a hard day as well. And the whole back end had a hard time. And some of that is because you're not getting pressure on the quarterback, which is we've talked about in the past. But the coverage, just there was a lot of trail coverage in this last game. The Lions didn't use their cornerbacks or their safeties either in any physical bump and run type coverage. They just expected them to play off man and shadow them. And they ended up in trail positions, and they're chasing. And when they're chasing for the whole game, you're going to fall behind. And when you have a pass-happy offense like the Bucs did, you know, the ball gets put in the air. And if you're trailing and you can't catch up, then that's how they're going to start catching touchdowns on you. And that's what we saw. So I'd like to see the defensive backs get a little bit more physical, especially this week when we get to the Denver Broncos. So we should probably shift over to the Denver Broncos right now at this point. The Broncos are hosting the Lions. It is at Mile High Stadium. I forget what the field is called, but it's still Mile High, right? Different conditions. It's actually going to be warmer in Mile High in Denver this weekend, a little bit warmer than it is here in Detroit. Detroit's going to be in the 30s. It's going to be in the high 50s there. The Broncos are 6.5-point favorites, and that's because of, one, I think they're hosting, and two, you know, they've won a couple games in their last few, which is not something the Lions can necessarily say. So that over-under is 6.5 right now favoring the Broncos. I'm sorry, the point totals are favoring the Broncos. The over-under is at 37.5, which is really low. It means it's expecting both offenses to struggle to put up points. Craig Rolstad is the referee. We've seen him before. The game will be on Fox with Kevin Harlan and Rich Gannon and Jay Feely. It's a lower TV crew, but again, you have two teams not making the playoffs, so that's to be expected. The Broncos are coming off a loss to the Kansas City Chiefs, where they only put up 3 points. And I think that's a big factor in why the over-under is so low, is because they couldn't put anything up against the Kansas City Chiefs last week. And while the 2 weeks before, they beat the Texans and the Chargers with Drew Lock as their quarterback, but Kansas City has really took it to them and held them off the scoreboard pretty much the entire game. So they're struggling on offense. Lions are struggling on offense. The Lions' pass defense is struggling, but their run defense is really good. The Denver defense is pretty much middle of the road on everything. They were much better at the beginning of the season. They've been headed in the wrong direction this part of the season. They have a lot of injuries, which is probably part of it. But those injuries aren't really keeping them out at this point. They have a couple players that are phenomenal, who've been playing very well. And we'll get to those matchups in just a second here. But let's start out by first talking about the Denver defense. I'm sorry, the Denver offense. They have Drew Lock, their second-round pick in this past draft. And they took him after needing to replace they traded for Joe Flacco. They started Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco ends up on IR, but Drew Lock is also on IR. So then they have to turn to Brandon Allen, who is an undrafted quarterback. They activate Drew Lock, and Allen goes on into a reserve role. Lock is promoted into a starting role, and they've been 2-1 with him as a starter, but they haven't really been impressive. He hasn't been overly impressive. But he's the second-round pick who had a high pedigree, and if you listen to Patricia this week, he talked about him pretty highly. Behind him, or sharing the backfield with him, is Philip Lindsay and Royce Freeman. They'll split time. Devontae Booker will see a little bit of time as well, but it's mostly Royce Freeman and Lindsay. Now, Lindsay was a Pro Bowler just a year ago, but they've really incorporated Royce Freeman a lot this year. Lindsay's still the guy that scares me the most. With Freeman, you can there's things about him that you can handle situationally, whereas Lindsay has some really game breaking speed, and that's been something the Lions have, I think, could struggle to handle. So Lindsay's a guy that I think will be someone the Lions will have to definitely account for. When you look out at the receiving targets, they basically have Courtland Sutton, and then that's about it. Everybody else is below average. I really like Deshaun Hamilton a couple years back. He's been starting with Tim Patrick injured. Now Patrick might return, so he might split some time with Deshaun Hamilton. Hamilton's kind of a deep threat. If you remember, we profiled him as a potential line a couple years ago. But Sutton is really their number one, and I have a feeling he's going to match up with Darius Slay. That matchup is going to get him into some fun, I guess, one-on-one coverages. It'll be interesting to see if he can win those battles, if Locke can throw him open. That's really going to be, when the ball goes in the air, it's going to go Sutton's way a lot of the time. When it doesn't, they're going to use a lot of tight ends as well. Jeff Uerman is technically their starter, but they drafted Noah Fant in the first round. He's the other Iowa tight end. Lions obviously drafted TJ Hawkinson. Fant was the other tight end at Iowa, and he also went in the first round. He has been dealing with a shoulder injury, but he's going to see the field a ton, just like Huerman will. So we'll see more two tight end sets and I think two receiver sets in Denver, and they're going to try and run the ball when they can, which hasn't been great, and then they're going to target a couple of their bigger bodies where they can. I don't really see a significant matchup that favors the Broncos here, other than I said, Philip Lindsay. I think you can use your safeties like Tracy Walker to focus on Fant. You can use Slay on Sutton, and then you're you're doing okay as a Lions secondary after that. There's not a ton of weak spots, but Lindsey's going to be someone that I don't know if they really have a good answer for. I don't know if they have anyone who can match his speed. I think, again, Tracy Walker is probably your best bet, but if you're having him account for Noah Fant, then you're shifting him away from Lindsey. And now if you put a linebacker on him, that's going to be a problem. That's a key matchup to watch here this weekend. On defense, shifting to the other side of the ball, the Denver defense, like I said, they're about middle of the road in pretty much everything. They were very good against the run. They run a 3-4. Their star stud is Von Miller. He's been dealing with an injury, but he's their guy. He's everything that we want Devin Kennard to be, right? But he, like I said, he's coming off an injury, so his play has been a little bit subdued, I guess I would say. On the defensive line, they have Draymond Jones, Mike Purcell, Shelby Harris. All three of them are very solid. They all play well above average, and that is a big reason why they've been good against the run. You add Von Miller into that, and that's a pretty decent defensive line. Now, with the return of Kerryon Johnson, if he returns, and the potential return of Bo Scarborough, that's going to be the matchup to watch, I think, when the Lions offense is on the field. Can the Lions establish a run against this crew? That's going to be a situation where I think Denver will be favored, but I think the Lions will try and win that whenever they can. Additionally, at linebacker, they have Alexander Johnson, who's terrific. He's one of PFF loves him. I think he's their number two off the ball linebacker. He plays their Mike, but next to him, Todd Davis is not as great. He's okay. He's average, but Johnson is really fantastic. On the opposite side of Von Miller is Malik Reed. He is also been a bit banged up, and so if he can't go, Jeremiah Atticho is a guy who the Lions fans have asked about numerous times if he would be a good player to match up in Detroit, just because he kind of fits that hybrid off the ball pass rushing linebacker type role. But so he's here in Denver and he can fill in when he needs to in that role. He's been all right, nothing significant. He's been okay. Their secondary though is going to have a little bit of a disadvantage this week because Kareem Jackson, who is a former corner for Houston, for the Texans for a really long time. Denver has used him at safety. He was having a fantastic year. He's suspended. And because he's suspended, he won't play. So right there, you're losing one of your safeties. Now, their other safety, Justin Simmons, out of Boston College, a guy that, again, Lions fans loved a couple years ago, he's the best safety in the league, one of the best safeties in the league right now. And he's playing at a very high level. So you had a nice tandem back there, and now you're losing half of that. So it'll probably be Will Parks that steps up into Kareem Jackson's role. But again, like I said, Will Parks is injured. So this is another one of their starters that is banged up and won't be at 100%. So it'll be interesting to see how that safety duo plays itself out, and is that a place where you can exploit? If it is, that probably means Logan Thomas or Jesse James, but again, how much can you really rely on them? And they're not really seam stretchers, they're more crossers, and I don't know if the Lions have the personnel to take advantage of this absence with the Kareem Jackson suspension. At corner, they have Chris Harris, who the Lions were interested in trading for and tried to trade for, and it fell through. He is on one corner, and then Isaac Yiddiam is on the other. Yiddiam was a guy in 2018 that a lot of Lions fans liked in the draft that year. He's now starting. I'd say he's underachieving. It'll be interesting to see how they deploy these corners. Will they try and match Chris Harris on Kenny Golladay? Because I don't know if Yiddiam can hang with Danny Amendola. and maybe Harris, who's a more natural slot, then covers Amendola, but then Yidiam should get exposed by Golladay. So there's an advantage here, depending on how they try and match up the Lions receivers. So if the offense is going to succeed, I think they're going to try and establish that run game, but they're probably going to end up going to a tight end who's in a better mismatch or going to a receiver that has a better mismatch. It's just a matter of, can Blau get them the ball where they need to be? That will be the question for the Lions offense if they're gonna move the ball. Special teams is about a wash. The Lions special teams has been good at times, was very good most of the year, struggled the last few weeks. Denver's is also kind of middle of the road, but in Mile High, that ball tends to travel. And this is a environment that Matt Prater is comfortable in. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see the Lions, even when it's close, if it's even remotely close and they're stuck, just let Prater hit that ball and try and put some points on the board. Because I think points are going to be hard to come by in this game. So that's pretty much the Denver Broncos. Joe sent me a... he sent me a text message when I told him that I was going to just do this solo since he wasn't able to get back from his business trip in time. He thinks the Lions are going to lose this game to the Denver Broncos 24-14. And unfortunately, I'm kind of in that same boat. My score was pretty close to that. I think it's a 24-17 game. I think the Lions are going to fall about a touchdown short of getting this one. So Joe and I are a lot closer in our predictions this week than we normally are. And I just think it's a tough environment. It's a travel. This team has struggled on the road. Blau struggled mightily the last time he was asked to play on the road. And even though Denver is beatable, I don't think with all the injuries and all the starters that are not available, I don't know how the Lions can put together a win here. Like I said, they can, but I'm not willing to wager one on their favor at this point. Now, if you are a Lions fan and you're interested in the fact that you're like, you say, oh, well, I don't want them to win because I want them to have a higher draft pick. Well, the thing is they can actually win a game and not drop. They can win one of these final two games and not drop out of their fifth spot. Right now, they hold the five spot. If they win one of their last two games, they would match up with the Arizona Cardinals record. But because Arizona Cardinals have a better strength of schedule or a more difficult strength of schedule than the Lions actually wouldn't even move anywhere. They would still stay stuck at five. And so winning this game isn't going to drop them in the draft order. Now, if they win this week and then they win next week against Green Bay, well, now they could drop as low as 12. And it'll probably would be 11 unless the Jaguars and the Falcons tie for some reason. But they could drop further if they win both. But if they win one of these last two games, they're probably not going to drop any lower than fifth. Now, because they won't drop any lower than fifth, though, winning one of these games would take them out of the opportunity of moving up. They lose these next two games, there's a chance they could move up to four or even three or even two, depending on how things play out. Really, you have to watch, because the Giants won last week, you have to watch a lot of different, the four games, or the four teams that are ahead of them. You can't get all the way up to one. You can't catch Cincy for the one spot, so they're not going to get that. So assuming the Lions lose out, after this weekend's game, if the Lions lose in Denver, and as long as and so the Giants are ahead of them, and Washington is ahead of them, and the Dolphins are ahead of them, and I'm blanking on the last one. I said Dolphins, Giants, Washington. Three teams. Yeah, because Cincy, and you can't catch Cincy. I apologize for my hiccup there. So the Giants and Washington play each other this week. So as long as they don't tie, one of those teams is going to win, one of the teams is going to lose. And so if the Lions lose, they're going to jump up one spot to four automatically. Now, if they lose and the Giants and Washington don't tie, so one of those teams wins. But then the Bengals and the Dolphins, who also play each other, if the Dolphins beat the Bengals, then the Dolphins would also drop behind the Lions, and the Lions would move up to the 3 spot. So it's very possible that with a win, you stay at 5. With a loss, you could move up to 4 or 3. Now, if the Lions want to move up to 2, then you have to look into the Week 17 games, and there's a whole bunch of other scenarios that go along with that, and we can address that when we get there. But there's a possibility that the Lions are going to be picking somewhere either at 3, 4, or 5, depending on how a couple of these games play out, and we'll see how it goes. But if you're a fan of the Lions and you don't want to root against them and you want them to win, but you also want them to have a high draft pick, well, you can feel comfortable rooting for them to win this week, and they're still going to be in the top 5 at the end of the day. So if you're rooting for the Lions to have a higher draft pick, well, then you're hoping for a loss, and you're hoping for someone between the Giants and the Washington to win. It doesn't matter which one at this point. And then you're hoping for the Dolphins to beat the Bengals. Other than that, it's you know, you're just trying to enjoy the game and look at as many young Lions as you can, because they're looking towards the 2020 season, and you should be looking towards the 2020 season as well. I think that's really the best kind of outlook to have right now. All right, I think that's it. We got another increase in our listeners this week. We got another rating, which is great. We didn't get a review, which is, again, totally, we've talked about this. We understand reviews are, you don't necessarily have to write them. We got a lot of really good reviews right now, and we're happy with that. But if you have the time and you want to give us one, that's great. If you want to give us a rating, yeah, that'd be great too. We appreciate all of them. I'm going to check this real fast. Oh, it looks like we did get another rating, another review, and we appreciate that. So up to 256, that's great. It's nice that people are sticking with us and that they want to hear about the Lions, even though it's a difficult time to be a Lions fan, but it's a step. You know, we're looking towards the 2020 offseason, and we appreciate that all of you are with us and looking towards the 2020 offseason as well. Enjoy the Lions game as much as you can, and however you want to root, please root that way. Enjoy it. Don't let anyone tell you you're wrong. And until next week, when Joe Caney returns, let's go Lions.